Tonight, President Trump makes it official. He's expected to formally announce his pick for a new Supreme Court justice to replace Anthony Kennedy, who's retiring. Trump's choice could shape the court for years to come, and we'll be hearing a lot about that in the days ahead. Meanwhile, here's a reminder of how consequential Supreme Court decisions can be. 2 weeks ago, the court upheld President Trump's latest travel ban. That in itself was big, but in his majority opinion, Chief Justice John Roberts went out of his way to overturn a previous ruling by the court. That was the 1944 Korematsu decision, which allowed the internment of Japanese Americans during World War II. Roberts wrote that Korematsu was gravely wrong the day it was decided and has no place in law under the Constitution. There are some who want the court to overturn another ruling dating back to World War II. Eric Muller is a law professor at the University of North Carolina. He thinks the court should revisit the case of Gordon Hirabayashi.
Gordon Hirabayashi was a young man, a student at the University of Washington in Seattle in 1942, when the government imposed the restrictions pursuant to the president's executive order on Japanese Americans. The restrictions that he fought were actually not removal from the coast, which was what the Korematsu decision was about. He fought the curfew that had been imposed on American citizens of Japanese ancestry in March of 1942. He refused to stay at home at night and ended up getting arrested and took his challenge to the lawfulness of that curfew all the way to the Supreme Court. And in the Hirabayashi decision, the Supreme Court upheld the constitutionality of this curfew that was imposed just on American citizens of Japanese ancestry and not on American citizens of German or Italian ancestry, even though we were at war with those two countries as well.
So on paper, that still stands as constitutional.
It does. In fact, it, not only does it still stand as constitutional, but somewhat concerningly, unlike the Korematsu decision, the one that the court overturned 2 weeks ago, which for decades had fallen into disrepute, the Hirabayashi decision has kind of flown off the radar screen. It was never as well known as the Korematsu case that came later, but it really established pretty much the same legal principle and is therefore just as dangerous as the Korematsu decision was, and you might even argue more dangerous because lawyers and judges actually have cited the Hirabayashi decision favorably in opinions and briefs over the years, including very recently. Just a few months ago, lawyers for the Department of Defense in a case pending in the Guantanamo Tribunal cited and relied upon language from the Hirabayashi decision in a brief. And so unlike Korematsu, which was pretty much, you know, dead as a doornail in terms of precedent for quite some time now, the Hirabayashi case is still somewhat alive and kicking and therefore much more worrisome because it could more easily be used in a future case to support action taken against people on the basis of their ancestry or their national origin or their religion.
So technically right now, the executive could curtail the liberties of a particular ethnic or religious group, citing Hirabayashi. Would that only be in a time of war or any time?
Well, the Hirabayashi decision itself was a proposition about deference to the executive during wartime. They were fairly clear in the Hirabayashi decision that they were articulating rules about what the president could and couldn't do in time of war. So if the government were to invoke or to try to use the Hirabayashi decision, most directly they would want to use it in a context of a declared war. We don't have very many of those anymore, though. So certainly it would be available for restrictions that might be imposed in the context of non-state terrorism, the kind of stuff that we saw on 9/11 and the kinds of concerns that we continue to have, you know, in the context of our current refugee and immigration discussions.
You want this ruling overturned, but how can the Supreme Court rule on the case without a new case being filed? I mean, there's nothing pending at the moment, is there?
That's correct. There is nothing pending at the moment. But if the court wanted to do it, it would do it probably in the same way as it did in the Korematsu, or I'm sorry, in the travel ban case 2 weeks ago. The travel ban case did not directly present the identical factual situation as Korematsu. Korematsu was about the mass removal of American citizens from the West Coast on the basis of their race. The travel ban case was not about that. It was about non-citizens and their rights at the border as they tried to travel into the United States. Nonetheless, the court took the opportunity for, you know, sort of from the rough similarity of some of the legal issues, to go out of its way to say, look, this decision from 75 years ago has been overruled in the court of history, and it was wrong when it was decided. I would imagine that a similar case within the next few years, given the world that we're living in and the concerns about terrorism and about favoring or disfavoring certain people for immigration into the United States on the basis of things like national origin and ancestry and religion, surely some sort of case will present itself with at least sufficient similarities to the issues in Hirabayashi that the court could take the opportunity to just go ahead and do for Hirabayashi what it did 2 weeks ago for Korematsu.
Whatever happened to the man at the center of this case, Gordon Hirabayashi?
A fascinating story. Gordon Hirabayashi served time in a prison camp in Arizona as a result of this conviction. And then when he was released, he then took the opportunity to make another act of resistance, which was to resist the military draft. In 1944, the government began drafting Japanese Americans out of the camps into the U.S. Army. And he was then prosecuted and convicted a second time for draft evasion, along with several hundred other Japanese American men in 1944. After the war, he went on and became a very successful academic and had a very distinguished career in academia.
And is he still alive?
No, he passed away a number of years ago. His children have remained very active. Jay Hirabayashi, for example, has remained very active in these kinds of civil rights causes. And in fact, he and the children of a couple of the other Supreme Court litigants from those Japanese-American cases in World War II have kind of banded together as a second-generation litigating force, and they have continued to file together briefs and pleadings in cases in which they are feel that they're able to speak with some authority about the civil rights deprivations that their fathers endured during World War II.
Eric Muller is a law professor at the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill. Thanks, Eric.
Thank you very much.
Whichever cases the Supreme Court takes up next session, the outcome could well depend on the nominee that President Trump is set to announce tonight. That and the fate of other Supreme Court precedents, of course, including Roe v. Wade. Like I said earlier, we'll be hearing a lot more on that in the days ahead. From the Nan and Bill Harris studios here at WGBH in Boston, I'm Carol Hills. Back with you tomorrow.